In a small alcove, a little statue of the Virgin Mary. A young blonde woman stands in front of it.
There is no God!
Two little red candles flutter beside the statuette. The woman grips the ledge of the alcove and bows her head. She looks up at the religious icon.
Give me a sign. Help me.
She climbs the wooden steps to the top of a tall old bell tower. One of the nuns tries to grab Maureen, but her hands slip and she falls through the wooden banister and plummets down the bell tower to the floor below. Other nuns gather around the body.
Wasn't your own sin great enough? You'll burn in hell for this! You'll burn in hell!
Now dressed in a modest yellow summer dress and carrying a light blue cardigan and leather suitcase, Maureen walks quickly away from the convent. The landscape ahead of her is rugged, barren, and desolate. The film stars Anthony Perkins as Norman Bates, with Diana Scarwid as Maureen, Jeff Fahey as Dwayne, and Roberta Maxwell as Tracy Venable. The film was written by Charles Edward Pogue and directed by Anthony Perkins. Maureen continues her journey across the scrubland, which is dotted with large cacti. She heads down a dusty bank. She loses her footing momentarily and steadies herself on a bush. She puts her hand to her face and continues downwards. She's now reached a deserted road. She walks over to the roadside and plonks her suitcase on the ground. She sits on it and leans her head in her hand, a look of anguish and exhaustion on her face. A car is approaching in the distance. Maureen stands up. The car seems to drive past, but Maureen picks up her suitcase and the rusty old car stops. Maureen has now crossed the road and the car reverses towards her.
Torch in that suitcase.
A handsome young man leans across her and locks the door once she's got in.
Wouldn't want to lose you. Don't worry about that. I ain't born again or nothing. Let me get some of this junk out of your way. Jesus, H just come with this beauty when I bought her used. I was thinking about replacing her with one of those magnetic compasses, you know, but you usually end up going the wrong direction anyway.
That makes two of us.
Yeah?
The young man puts on his sunglasses and the car moves off.
Water?
Thank you.
Name's Dwayne, by the way. Dwayne Duke. Friends just call me Duke. You can put that suitcase in the back seat if you want.
Thank you.
She does so.
Hey, watch the guitar.
I'm sorry.
No harm done. Just gotta watch the guitar. That's my bread and butter. Going to L.A. to be a rock and roll star. What about you? Where are you going? What are you doing back there? Car trouble?
Yes. Yes, I had car trouble.
Oh, yeah? What kind?
No car.
No car? Well, that's the worst kind. Still don't know where you come from, though.
So? Does that make you my father confessor?
Jesus! I just asked you a couple normal questions. You think I accuse you of murder or something? Hey, look, it's none of my business. You want to play mystery lady, that's fine by me. I don't care where you come from. Could have fallen down from the sky for all I know. Probably did. A little angel just tumbled off her cloud. Well, hold on, angel. I'll get you where you're going. Just going for a little ride here.
Dusk, and the rusty car carries on along the deserted road. It is now dark and raining very heavily. The windscreen wipers are on, and inside the car, Duane is peering out, trying to see the road ahead.
Get out of here!
The car is veering around across the central road markings. Duane taps the dashboard.
Come on, baby, come on.
The car skids round to the opposite direction and stops.
You all right?
Yes.
Duane runs his hands through his hair. The car now turns slowly round in the road and pulls up at the roadside. Inside the car, Duane stops the engine and puts a cushion behind his head.
What are you doing?
It's as far as we go in this shit, honey.
But it could rain all night.
That's right.
Duane lights a cigarette, and Maureen looks slowly round at him.
Better get some sleep.
With a suggestive look, he blows out a plume of smoke towards her. Maureen turns and looks ahead of her at the rain. The rain continues to pelt down on the stationary vehicle. A lorry drives past. Inside the car, Duane is holding a small torch. Maureen is lying curled up on the seat next to him. He shines the torch along her leg, up her thigh, and into her skirt. He lifts her skirt slightly and then shines the torch in her face. She blinks and wakes up. She sits up slowly.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
He leans towards her.
You kind of slid over.
It's still raining.
He kisses her neck.
Why did you do that?
Why did you stop me?
I didn't have time.
Well, I'll give you another chance.
I'm not very good at this sort of thing.
Well, you could have fooled me.
He pushes himself against her.
Please don't. Oh.
Well, I guess we got him a little excited.
No. Don't do that.
He kisses her roughly.
Hey, what's the problem, Angel?
Get away from me.
She slaps him in the face, opens the door, and staggers into the rain.
Are you crazy? What the hell's wrong with you? Get in here!
Just give me my suitcase!
He pulls the suitcase off the back seat and throws it into a muddy puddle.
Stupid bitch! You could have been coming instead of going!
With a glare, Duane shuts the car door. Maureen holds the cardigan up to her face and clings to the suitcase. The car pulls away. Daylight at the Bates Motel. Sand is blowing across the parking area. A tall sign advertises the Bates Motel in large letters. Behind it is the bungalow-style motel accommodation, a yellow wooden slat-fronted building in an L shape. Each room has a door and a window overlooking the parking area. At the rear of it, at the top of an embankment, is a sinister Gothic-style house reached by a set of stone steps. In the window of the motel, a hand-painted sign, Help Wanted. A chair is rocking on the motel veranda. The pages of a telephone directory are flapping in a phone box. A lizard climbs up onto the pedestal of a stone bird table. Four small birds are feeding. A discarded paperback book lies on the ground. On the bird table, a red-headed bird gives a few jerky movements. It drops off the table and into the dirt below. It flaps a few times. Another bird drops onto the ground. A man's shadow is now cast across the dirt over the bodies of the birds. The man wears beige trousers and trainers and a black and white checked shirt. He kneels down by the birds and deposits the dead creatures into a paper bag, turning one over in his hand. Now inside, the man is stroking a dead starling. He's a skinny man with cropped brown hair. The man sighs as he sits at a kitchen table. He assesses a couple of little coloured glass eyes to put in the bird's empty eye sockets. He opens up the empty chest cavity of the creature and tips in spoonfuls of white powder. He knocks the excess powder off the spoon and uses it to spread a spoonful of peanut butter onto a cracker. Beside the plate of crackers is an open newspaper. One of the articles has the headline, "Spool Still Missing," and a photograph of an old lady. The man seems to have a flashback.
Are you really my mother?
The name Spool doesn't mean anything to you?
No, should it?
It was Norma Bates' maiden name. The woman you thought was your mother was my sister. She never mentioned me, did she?
No, she didn't. You're sure you won't have a sandwich?
The man picks up a shovel.
Pardon?
He strikes the lady on the back of the head. The chair she's on collapses, and she lies quivering on the kitchen floor. The man is sewing up the dead starling. As he stares at the bird, he's now sewing up a woman's hand and forearm. He recoils for a moment, and then he's sewing up the bird again. A paper bag is moving on the table. The man looks alarmed. He gets up off the chair and backs up against the window. A starling emerges out of the bag. The bird flies off and perches on the edge of a cardboard box. The man puts out his hand and the starling steps into his palm. The man grabs the bird very gently. With a smile, he opens the door into the sunlight. He sits down on some wooden steps, and after a final little stroke, he lets the bird go, blowing out a puff of air as he does so. The starling flies off. The man puts his hand up to his eyes and watches proudly. Meanwhile, inside Dwayne's car, the skinny man gets up.
Hi there!
Dwayne spots the man at the top of the stone steps.
Be right down.
The man turns back towards the house. Dwayne, a cigarette in his mouth, heads away from his rusty car towards the motel. At the door of the motel office, Dwayne notices the cash drawer has been left open. He spots the Help Wanted sign on the door. He leans over the counter to the cash drawer. He peers out of the window at the sinister house. No one is around. He looks down at the money.
Room.
The skinny man is in the doorway.
I'd love one. I don't think I can afford it, though. You know, you ought to keep that register closed. Somebody will steal you blind.
Wouldn't get very far in what's in there, I'm afraid.
Business slow?
Well, you're my first customer of the day. Or did you just stop in for directions to the interstate? Well, there's an entrance.
No, right? Actually, I was interested in that help wanted sign in the window. But if business is bad, I...
Oh, no, it's not bad. It's just slow.
Dwayne looks at the room keys.
Oh, yeah, well, 12 cabins, 12 vacancies. Well, we've been closed for a while. Renovations, but... There's more life along this road than there used to be, and good prices, good service. Things will pick up. I've got a rebuilt ice machine and 4 cabins booked for later in the week. Fairvale High's homecoming, big game against Central. I seem to be rattling on. Yes, there is a job. Are you interested?
In money? The only honest way I know to get it is to earn it or inherit it. I don't have any rich relatives about to die. Got an application for him?
Oh, that won't be necessary. My name's Norman. Norman Bates.
Whoa. What you been painting?
Oh, I'm sorry. Step into the back, the parlor, while I clean up.
Said the spider to the fly.
Mm-hmm.
In the back room, there are stuffed birds on the wall. Dwayne looks at them quizzically.
Local branch of the Audubon Society?
My hobby, stuffing things. I have a seat,
Dwayne Duke, just call me Duke.
Dwayne sits down.
Well, I can pay you $5 an hour, Duke. You'd work the desk, clean rooms, make beds, empty trash, that sort of thing.
He picks up a paper bag.
Want some of these? You'd be general assistant. The work's not too hard, and you'd have lots of free time.
Assistant, huh?
Well, I'm the manager, and you'd be my assistant, so I guess you'd be assistant manager. You'd get a free room, of course, and work mostly days. I prefer the nights.
Well, I gotta be straight with you, Norm.
Norman.
I'm not looking for anything long term. I just want to make enough bucks to get the brakes in my car fixed and build up a little stake for L.A. I'm a singer. But I wouldn't mind filling in until you found somebody permanent. I just won't be staying around too long.
Norman sits down with a frown.
No one ever does.
Then Dwayne is unloading his car.
Your cabin's down at the end. Why don't you go unpack? I've got to get back up to the house for a bit.
You live up there, huh?
Yeah, me and myself alone.
Dwayne is playing his guitar on the veranda, which stretches round the front of the motel.
You clear on the credit card machine?
Yeah, I used to work as a pump jockey.
Remember, the rooms are...
$20.95 single, $25.95 double.
I'll bring you back a couple of burgers, okay?
All right!
In a modest diner, a chef is serving the local sheriff coffee.
Still beats the hell out of me. Just doesn't show up for work one day. Thought you guys would have turned up some clues by now, John.
Our apartment's all in order. Nothing to indicate anything wrong. She didn't say anything to her landlord.
Well, you think she'd say something to me if she was just going to take off work for almost a month? Emma Spool was as regular as clockwork. I don't think she missed a day in the 7 years I've owned this dump. I just hope nothing serious happened to the old girl.
You mean like Norman Bates? Didn't he and Mrs. Spool work here together? And rumor has it that he's got a weakness for older women.
Well, miss, rumors and innuendo have caused that boy enough trouble. Just what's your interest, anyway?
I drove all the way from L.A. to see him.
And what about? You another relative of somebody he killed?
I don't think that's really any business of yours, Sheriff.
Well, the peace of this community is my business, young lady.
And until I've broken some law, lay off the third degree, huh?
Why can't you just leave the poor slob alone?
What are you guys, his fan club?
No, we just believe in giving people a second chance, lady. What Norman did was a long time ago, and he paid the price.
Depends on who you ask.
20 years in the bughouse is paying the price, girlie. And anyway, the guy's okay now. When he worked here, he was always on time, and he did his job.
Gee, let's make him employee of the month.
Go ahead and talk smart, lady. But the guy just wants to be left alone in peace.
Look. Norman Bates has had enough garbage dumped on him. Just leave him.
Afternoon, Sheriff.
Alone.
Mrs. Tadler.
What'll it be, Norman?
Norman sits.
Chicken fried steak is good today.
All right, and a glass of milk, please, and a couple of burgers to go.
I'm warning you, I don't want trouble.
Then let go of my arm, or I'll holler police brutality.
She gets up.
Mind if I join you, Mr. Bates? Venable. Tracy Venable.
Thanks, Myrna.
She reaches into her briefcase.
Coastal reports?
I write for them sometimes. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
I mind.
Look, Mr. Bates.
Norman.
I'm doing an article on the insanity defense and the rehabilitation of mentally ill murderers. A lot of people think that they can't be rehabilitated and shouldn't be allowed back in the streets, that there shouldn't be an insanity defense. We always hear the objections of the victims and their relatives, but in a way, murderers who can't help themselves are victims, too. Your point of view would be important to me.
This lady's bothering you, Norman. I'll have her leave.
Isn't your coffee break about over, Sheriff?
The sheriff gives her a vexed look and walks away.
Anything else, Norman?
So what do you think?
About?
What we were just saying. I mean, Norman, you were incarcerated for 20 years.
22?
Right. For 22 years, you were locked away someplace. Now the state says you're sane. You paid your debt. Then Lila Loomis starts to persecute you.
Because of what happened to her sister?
Yes. Marion Crane, right?
Norman is staring out of the window open-mouthed as Maureen gets down from a lorry.
Norman.
Right.
But that was 20 years ago.
22.
A long time for someone to harbor revenge. Aren't you the least bitter about what Lila Loomis tried to do to you?
He shakes his head.
I understand. My cure couldn't cure the hurt I caused. My return to sanity didn't return the dead. There's no way to make up that loss. The past is never really past. It stays with me all the time. And no matter how hard I try, I can't really escape. It's always there, throbbing inside you, coloring your perceptions of the world, and sometimes controlling them.
But that's my point, Norman. You aren't without conscience. You live with guilt and torment. You punish yourself all the time. Why does the rest of society have to? Take Mrs. Spool's disappearance. What if some well-meaning citizen got the idea that you had something to do with it?
Norman is glancing down at Maureen's suitcase as she passes him. It has the initials MC on it.
I'm not upsetting you, am I, Norman? All this talk about Mrs. Spool is only hypothetical.
What's yours, babe?
I was only using her as an example of how people might, given your past history, tend to automatically blame you for any murder in the area.
Norman looks alarmed. Maureen is now staring back at him. He's been having a flashback of a blonde woman being stabbed in a shower. The woman slides down the tiles. The shower curtain is pulled off the rail, and the woman's head slumps onto the bathroom floor. Norman seems to imagine Maureen's face slumped in a similar fashion.
You're not going, are you, Norman? I'd like to talk to you again.
Whoa. Now, you're not going to stiff us, are you, Norman?
Maureen speaks to the waitress.
Excuse me, could you tell me, is there an inexpensive place to spend the night around here?
With a look of trepidation, Norman deposits $3 bills on the counter. And again, staring back at Maureen, he pushes open the door and leaves. Next to the door is a handwritten poster saying, "Have you seen this lady?" with a photo of Mrs. Spool. Later, a number of small framed black and white photographs stand on an austere wooden dresser. The room is dark and shadowy, with other pieces of old-fashioned wooden furniture in it. At one end, bathed in red light from a floor lamp, Norman is sitting in front of an upright piano. Meanwhile, Duane has his feet up on the counter of the motel office. He's tucking into his burger. He looks at the room keys and thinks to himself. He leans on the counter and peers out of the window. Maureen is walking towards the road outside the motel carrying her suitcase. Duane gets up. Maureen approaches the building and sees the rusty car.
Hello, Angel.
You work here.
It's called suffering from one's art. Look, I'm sorry about last night. I was a little road weary. I'm glad you didn't drown.
I'm so very tired.
Well, you won't find another place close.
He bends down to her suitcase.
Look, don't worry. Aside from total boredom, nothing's going to happen to you here.
He puts his hand out in a friendly manner. She puts her hand to her face anxiously. Norman is watching this from a window up in the sinister house. He turns away. Back in the office.
Maureen Coyle. That's a pretty name.
How much?
For a single, $25.95.
She's clutching a bundle of money. She turns to him and holds out the cash. He grabs it, stuffs it into the drawer, and places a coin and a key on the counter.
There you go, Angel. Enjoy your stay.
She picks up the key and coin and leaves the office. Duane rubs the chopped-off corner of one of her $5 bills and puts it in his pocket. Maureen approaches the door to her room. Norman is loitering nearby, watching her. She spots him. He gives her an awkward smile. She goes into her room. Norman goes into the office, looking tense.
Your type, Norm?
You gave her cabin one.
Makes it kind of cozy.
Norman turns.
Clean her up a little. She looked pretty good.
Norman leaves the office. Later, in a room inside the sinister grey house, the silhouetted figure of an old woman is seated at a table. Norman fidgets nervously, looking out of a window.
Put me closer to the window.
Someone will see you, Mother.
Are you ashamed of me?
You know why, Mother. They've even written about you in the newspaper.
Stop your whining, boy. All this fuss over nothing.
Not nothing. I saw her. Even the initials on her suitcase. M.C. Marion Crane.
Another of your cheap erotic delusions out of your cheap erotic imagination. You killed her. The slut deserved it. But she's dead, and the dead don't come back.
You came back.
I never went away. Don't you know that by now? You can't get rid of me. I'll always be with you, Norman. Always. Stand up straight and wipe your snotty little nose. If the disgusting little whore is going to upset you so much, just get rid of her.
No.
Norman stares at the old woman.
Then maybe I will.
Meanwhile, in her room, Maureen opens her suitcase. She lifts up her pink dress and lets it fall, closing her eyes thoughtfully. She walks around the bed and sits on the edge of it. She nervously plays with her fingers as she looks around the room. She spots a Bible on the bedside table. She is now clasping her arms together, rocking herself, eyes closed, grimacing. She puts her head in her hands. Later that night, Dwayne is in town. He crosses the street. He wears a grey and red lumberjack shirt and jeans. He tucks himself in and opens the door into a bar. Inside, he leans on the counter. There only appears to be one other customer.
What'll it be?
Give me a beer.
He strolls over to a jukebox. Then he walks round the bar. Tracy Venable is sitting there holding a cigarette. Dwayne pulls out a little box of matches from his shirt pocket and sits.
Hi.
I'm Dwayne.
No kidding.
He lights a match and holds it out to her unlit cigarette.
Any objections to a guy trying to buy you a drink?
I got a drink.
So have another. You got a limit?
Only to my patients.
You don't have to call me Dwayne if you don't like.
I don't have to call you at all.
Friends call me Duke.
I had a dog named Duke once.
Really? Well, scratch my belly, my leg will shake.
I hated the mud.
His face drops.
Keep the matches, lady. You need them. You're about as warm as a cry for help.
Tracy stares at the matchbox.
Hey, just a minute, Duke. Dwayne.
Whatever. I'm easy.
I've noticed. You staying there?
Working there.
Even better. Let's sit down. I'll buy you a drink.
She leads Dwayne around the corner of the bar. The barwoman looks round at a small telly. It shows someone struggling to get back in their little boat in a fast-running river. The telly is on in the back room at the motel. Norman is sitting on the window ledge pensively. He gets down and moves across the room, switching off the TV. He faces an oil painting in a heavy wooden frame. He frowns coldly at the painting. In the classical style, it depicts a naked woman being held by two clothed men in a forest. Norman swallows and stares at the image of the naked woman's body. He rubs his forehead. He approaches the painting and takes it off the wall. Behind it, a large chunk of plaster has been knocked out, in the middle of which is a small spy hole. He peers into it. In the next room, Maureen, her face obscured, pulls off her vest. She has a white bra and large white knickers on. Norman watches her as she starts to remove her bra. She turns round to reveal her bare back. She flexes her fingers as she takes off her bra. Norman is watching wide-eyed. He can see her legs as she removes her stockings. She gets off the bed, now naked. Norman recoils from the spy hole. He looks down for a moment, then returns to his vantage point and looks at Maureen's bare bottom as she walks slowly towards the bathroom. She drops her knickers on the floor and closes the bathroom door. A large kitchen knife glistens in the moonlight. Someone wearing a pair of old lady's shoes approaches the door of Maureen's room. The door is opened, and in the doorway stands the shadowy, silhouetted figure of an old lady, her grey hair in a neat bun. The steam is rising in the bathroom. Maureen is laying motionless, her eyes staring upwards. The intruder now stands at the edge of the bed and surveys the clothes lying on top of the bedsheet. The figure approaches the bathroom door, which is slightly ajar. The white shower curtain has been drawn around the bath. The old lady pulls back the curtain. The bath is already filled with blood. Maureen lifts up her wrists. Blood pumps out of two slits in them. As Maureen stares at the silhouetted figure, she seems to see it as an apparition of the Virgin Mary. Instead of a dagger, Mary is holding a crucifix. The apparition fades and blurs. Back at the bar, Dwayne looks shocked.
Jeez, I figured Bates was a geek, but a full-fledged Looney Tune? You think he off this spool, broad?
Well, he acted pretty weird this morning when I brought the subject up, but then Norman's a pretty weird-acting guy.
Oh, shit. So you'll pay me for,
Anything I can use.
How about this? Checked a girl in this afternoon. Nice looker, too. One old Norman Saar. You kind of freaked? Guess he was strolling down memory lane.
Tracy put some money onto the table between them.
Are you leaving so soon?
Afraid so.
Wouldn't rather work some of this off and trade. I'll credit your account.
You know, you really shouldn't rely so much on that pretty face and those pearly whites, because come-ons like that could get them both punched out. Then you'd be left with only your charm.
Dwayne makes a face. He notices a couple of blonde young women are watching him from another table. Meanwhile, a nun in white vestments is standing over Maureen, who is lying in a bed.
Forgive me.
You're all right. You're in St. Matthew's Hospital.
The nun shakes a thermometer and leaves.
I'm Father Brian. I'm the resident psychiatrist.
Maureen closes her eyes in distress.
Maureen, do you know who saved you?
Mary.
Well, I'm sure she had a hand in it, but there was someone else.
You ought to be real proud, Norman.
Yes, it was very heroic of you.
Well, how do you happen to be here?
Oh, just my dumb luck, I'm afraid. I was passing by the motel and saw the ambulance leaving and decided to see what was up.
Must have been disappointed when you found out.
How did Norman find out?
Towels.
Towels?
Yes, he was bringing some fresh towels to her room. Now, I do know my job, Miss Venable.
Oh, Mr. Bates, she would like to see you.
Norman nods at the sheriff and slowly goes in.
I wouldn't go pick out a silverware pattern just yet, Sheriff.
The sheriff looks nonplussed. Meanwhile, Norman slowly sits down, frowning at Maureen.
You're the one who found me, Mr. Bates.
Norman.
My name's Maureen.
She turns her head away.
I just wanted to thank you for what you did.
Well, I can't have that sort of thing going on in my motel. Gives the place a bad name. Please, don't take that the wrong way, Marion. I'm sorry. I mean, Maureen, I'm sorry.
I guess I did leave the bathroom a mess.
I've seen it worse.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to be such a bother.
You're no bother. No bother at all. Anyway... people should look out for each other, don't you think? I mean, we sometimes get lost. But if there'd only been someone looking out for us to help us understand, maybe we wouldn't do some of the sad, awful things we do.
You're very kind.
He swallows nervously.
I should let you rest. Do you have somewhere to go when you get out? If you want, you can stay at the motel until you're better. FOC, of course, free of charge. We're never full. You can stay as long as you like. It would give you a chance to sort things out.
Why are you so kind to me?
He nods slightly.
You remind me of someone I knew once.
But you don't know me. After the way you found me, you must think I've gone mad.
No. No.
He leans into her.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
It's just that that sometimes the despair, it's just so overwhelming that all you want, you just want to stop.
He nods again.
I'd like to stay at your motel for a few days, if you really don't mind.
I'm glad you're safe.
Thank you. Thank you for looking out for me.
Sure.
He gets up with a grin. Her face relaxes a little. He walks out of the ward and shuts the door. Now he's back in his dark house in his mother's room.
You were down there, weren't you, Mother? Weren't you? I'm glad she didn't die. I'm glad.
She will.
Outside.
Touch her, don't you ever touch her! Don't. Be quiet, someone will hear us!
Sure like the TV up loud, don't they?
Duane looks up at the house. The curly blonde woman from the bar feels his shirt, but he grabs her hands. She tilts his face towards hers, and they kiss. He picks her up, and they head towards the motel. Later, she's trying to open the lid of a large metal icebox leaning against the outside wall of the motel office. She falls over with the effort. Norman is standing behind her.
I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah.
I usually keep this thing locked and there's no one staying down here.
He approaches the icebox and lifts the lid. The woman gets up.
Mama's little helper. Very sweet. Are you the guy who plays his TV up so loud?
Huh? Oh, the TV. Yeah. Yeah. Who are you? A friend of Duke's?
We're getting to know each other.
She sidles up to him.
So why don't you come down and join our party?
Norman turns and looks at her.
Oh, no. No, thanks.
Too bad. Thanks for looking after me. See you around, maybe.
Norman watches intently as the young woman swaggers across the courtyard towards the motel room.
Maybe.
In Duane's room, there are images of naked women torn out of magazines and stuck to the wall. The blonde woman licks her lips and takes a drag on a cigarette. She exhales the smoke. She runs the cigarette down her bare arm and rubs the ash off. She has a sheet wrapped around her torso. Duane is naked, sitting on an armchair, pointing two bedside lights in the woman's direction. The woman sits back against the wall and licks one of the images seductively. Duane gets up. The woman gets up too and provocatively extends one of her legs as she puts down her cigarette. The sheet still draped around her naked body. She approaches Duane. As he takes hold of her, the sheet falls. They start to kiss in the shadows and half-light. He pushes her down onto a chair. He kisses her and fondles her breasts. They slowly and passionately kiss. Later, the woman emerges out of the bathroom, dressed only in her knickers. Duane is lying on the bed. She jumps onto the bed.
God, don't tell me you're one of those guys who farts, rolls over, and then goes to sleep.
I picked you up in a bar after one lousy drink. What, do you want to get married?
You shitheel.
I gotta get up for work soon. So why don't you just go home, huh?
How? You brought me out here.
Here's cab fare, phone book's on the table.
Jesus, I'm
You make it all sound so cheap.
It is, but it beats a vibrator.
Yeah? Well, at least the vibrator gets me off.
Ow! Use the payphone, bitch.
Let go!
He tosses the half-naked woman out of the room. She lies in the dirt. A light is on in Norman's house. The woman approaches Dwayne's door.
Give me my clothes!
Dwayne opens the door and angrily throws some clothes in the woman's face. He shuts the door. The woman pulls a little yellow polo-necked top over her head. She pulls on her jeans. She picks up her handbag and strikes the door with it. She picks up her shoes and walks over to a nearby phone box. She goes in. The booth lights up as she closes the door. She empties the contents of her handbag onto a small shelf. She pulls her top back over her head and turns it round the right way. She pulls the top down again over her face. Suddenly, a hand holding a kitchen knife bursts through the glass. The door is pushed open, and the silhouetted figure of the old woman drives the knife repeatedly into the struggling girl, whose top is now splattered with blood. The bloody knife continues to be plunged into the girl. Finally, she slumps down, and the attacker walks away.
We're sorry. We're unable to complete your call as dialed. Please hang up and dial again.
Back at the house.
Mother! Oh, God, mother! Blood! Blood!
Daylight at the Bates Motel. The sun is shining, the sky is blue. The door of room 12 opens, and Dwayne steps out onto the veranda, rubbing his eyes sleepily. Something attracts his attention. Norman is on all fours washing the telephone booth with a soapy sponge. He looks round at Dwayne and flinches.
Up early, huh?
Dwayne walks away. Norman leans his head against one of the glass panels. Dwayne steps into the office and shakes his head slightly. He opens the cash drawer. The dollar bill with the missing corner is back in the drawer. At the hospital...
When I was young, my decisions had always been made for me by my parents. Becoming a nun was my idea. But as I grew closer to taking my final vows, it became so frightening. I began to dwell upon things that I would never know.
What things?
Hungers for the flesh, Father.
Such desires are perfectly normal.
Sister Catherine said it was bad, and that if my faith were strong enough, that I wouldn't have evil thoughts.
Why didn't you just leave the novitiate, rather than be tormented by your own uncertainties?
But doesn't the church teach us that we must endure suffering?
It also teaches us that suicide is a sin.
I knew it was wrong, Father. I was afraid to face the consequences of my own sins.
Maureen, it seems to me that only you have given up on yourself, not God. Why else would he have twice saved you from your own desperateness?
As I lay there, I saw the Virgin standing above me. A halo of white light was about her, and she was holding a shiny silver crucifix, and her arms were outstretched as though she were beckoning me. Oh, Father, what did she want of me?
Dwayne shows the $5 note to Tracy.
What about this?
Maybe she got change for the phone or for cigarettes or something. It might help if you knew the girl's name.
Forgot to ask.
It's supposed to come right after, "Hi, I'm Dwayne, but you can call me Duke." Look, I'm more interested in those voices you heard up at the house.
Maybe voices. Could have been a TV or a radio.
Tracy nods and moves out of the motel office.
Quite a crowd.
Yeah, Homecoming weekend. They're celebrating the big victory. The game's not until tonight. Where are you going?
He said he was at the hospital picking up the girl, didn't you?
Yeah? Yeah! But what if he comes back?
You don't know anything about it.
Dwayne watches her go. Norman and Maureen arrive in a taxi. A portly man approaches the car.
Fairvale Central, huh? Come on! Fairvale Central, where are you from?
Fairvale.
Oh, too bad. Too bad. Hope you don't mind losing.
He pulls Maureen out of the car. Tracy climbs the stone steps towards the house.
Miss Venable!
Hey! After you check in, come on down to pool. We're having a party. And hey, we are gonna beat your ass!
Norman nervously attempts to smile. He walks away as the young group laugh.
Miss Venable, are you looking for something?
Just you. Hoping we could finish our little chat.
Your little chats end up sounding more like interrogations.
Some other time, perhaps?
No. And please, don't come back here again, miss.
He leans towards her, and she retreats back down the steps. Then he slowly walks into the open doorway of Motel Room 1.
Oh, Norman, how sweet of you. You had them cleaned.
Well, they were a little wrinkled and wet.
And a little out of style, too.
Oh, no. Conservative clothes never go out of style. I especially like that one.
He stands in the doorway and looks outside anxiously.
You'd look swell in that tonight.
He leaves. Maureen, holding up a pink dress, smiles. Later, in an urban house.
I think Mrs. Poole said she had a son once, but if so, he never visited her. And God knows she never went anywhere.
Never went out, huh?
Just work. Real homebody. Oh, well, listen, I've got a backed-up toilet.
Mind if I stay here and snoop a bit?
Why should I mind, sweetheart? It's already been a parade through here with cops and everything. You can rent it for all I care. Spoolie's rent was 2 weeks past due.
How much for just a couple of hours?
Thanks. You don't know what a pleasure it is to see a woman in this building without blue hair and varicose veins. Just close the door when you leave.
Sure thing.
Tracy's sitting on the edge of a sofa. She leans round and looks at some envelopes beside the phone. She lifts the phone and picks up a piece of paper underneath it, but she replaces it. She studies a little notepad nearby. Then she turns to the coffee table in front of her. She picks up a large old book and rapidly flicks through the pages. A magazine has several phone numbers written in pen on its cover. She pulls out another magazine, but the one underneath it has a phone number again written on the cover. She turns it round and matches the number to one written on a paper napkin she's holding. She dials a number on the old-fashioned telephone while a black-and-white photograph of Mrs. Spool looks down at her from on top of the wooden bureau.
Bates Motel. Hello?
Tracy slowly puts down the receiver. Back in the shadowy Bates house, Norman approaches a mirror. He steps down to the landing.
I'm going. I won't be out late. Mother? She's a nice girl.
He heads over to a door on the landing that's slightly ajar. He shuts the door and rushes down the stairs. Then, in an elegantly old-fashioned restaurant, Maureen and Norman are sitting at a table. Norman is resting his chin in his hand and smiling as Maureen drinks from a glass of wine.
I've never drunk this much before.
Me neither. My mother never allowed liquor in the house.
What shall we toast to this time?
Happiness.
Maureen smiles at him as she drinks.
Would you like to dance?
Oh, no. No, I couldn't.
Oh, it's very easy. My mother taught me. Come on.
He holds her hand to assist her up.
I feel woozy.
It'll make you light on your feet.
He leads her round the table towards the dance floor. She stares at the floor, then looks round bashfully.
Norman, I feel silly.
Nothing wrong in that. Now, just follow me. I go forward, you go back. Slow, slow. Quick, quick. Slow, slow. Quick, quick. See, you just learned your basic box step.
The bearded piano player watches them.
Slow, slow. Quick, quick. Slow, slow. Quick.
They're now moving round slowly, both open-mouthed and thoughtful, neither looking at each other. Maureen rests her face against Norman's shoulder. Back at the motel, it's raining heavily. A young woman gets a bucket of ice from the ice machine. She closes the lid and heads back along the veranda, stopping at the office doorway.
Oh, well, they say the wet look is coming back.
A taxi has pulled up. Norman scampers out of it. He takes Maureen's hand and leads her out too. He reaches into his pocket and pays the taxi driver. He steps into the office.
So how's the party going, Dick?
It's cool, Norm. Everything's under control.
You mind hanging out for a while?
Hey, it's your overtime.
Maureen is still on the veranda looking towards the house. In the flash of lightning, she notices the figure of an old woman up at one of the windows. Her hands up to her face, Maureen steps back. Norman is standing in the office doorway. She walks past him and stands in front of her room door. She goes in. Dwayne nudges Norman and gives him a nod. Norman looks round with a look of confusion. He walks towards room one. Dwayne steps out onto the veranda with a smile. Norman walks into the room. Maureen stands with her back to him.
What's wrong?
I must have had too much to drink. I just thought I saw a woman up in your house.
Norman thinks, then turns and puts his head round the door.
It's okay, Duke. You can go ahead and take off.
Whatever you say, boss.
Norman goes back into the room. Maureen is holding a couple of glasses.
Sorry I can't offer you anything to drink.
Oh, that's okay.
Except water.
No, that's fine.
Gee, they're pretty loud.
Yeah.
He awkwardly holds up his glass. They have a quick drink, and Norman moves away.
Norman, I had a very special time tonight.
Oh, me too.
She looks round at him.
Thank you.
He approaches her and takes her glass off her, putting it down. He now stands right in front of her. With awkwardness and a little nervousness, the couple look at each other. Norman leans in, then turns.
I should go.
Because of her?
Who?
That lady that you said I remind you of. Did she mean a lot to you?
We weren't. It wasn't. Like it is with you.
She lifts his hands to her lips.
How is it with me?
Norman leans in and they embrace. They press their lips to each other. Then they're lying on the bed, still kissing. Maureen is on top of Norman. They roll over and continue kissing. Norman lifts his head up.
What's wrong?
I'm sorry. Maureen, I just can't do this. It wouldn't be right. Not just now.
It wouldn't be right.
He pulls her up slightly, then lays her back down.
Let's just lie here and hold each other.
Norman slumps on top of her, face down in the mattress. Maureen clings to him and shuts her eyes. Later, a young woman with curly dark hair touches the sleeping Maureen on the shoulder.
but you fell asleep with your door open. With some of these drunken, horny bastards still running around this place, it's not such a good idea. I just thought you'd want to know. Thank you. I'll close it on my way out.
Maureen nods sheepishly and watches her leave. Back in the house.
You dirty, dirty boy.
But I didn't do anything, Mother. I didn't do anything with her. She's a nice girl.
She's a whore.
But we didn't do anything.
You let her come between us.
But this isn't right. It isn't natural.
It's perfectly natural for a son to love his mother.
God, will you leave me alone, Mother? Will you leave me alone?
Norman clasps his hands over his ears. The silhouetted figure of the old woman is lying in a bed, seeming to mutter. He approaches the figure. He bends down to listen closely. Then he puts his hand over the old woman's mouth. He moves round to the end of the bed. There's a wooden trunk. He opens the trunk. A grey-haired old lady wig and a kitchen knife are within it. He picks up the knife. Maureen approaches the house. Norman turns round.
Norman, are you in there? Are you awake?
It's me. Bring me the knife, Norman.
The mother's sitting up.
Norman, are you up there?
Bring it to me. Did you hear me? What are you doing there, Norman? What are you doing?
With his fingers round the blade of the knife, Norman punches his hand into a table.
Please answer me. It's Maureen.
What do you want?
What happened to you? Are you all right?
Yes. No. I'm feeling a little sick.
Oh, let me come up.
No! Get away! I had a little too much to drink. I just need to rest.
Maureen looks shocked.
All right, Norman.
Please, go back to your room. Lock your door. Please.
All right.
Maureen retreats out of the house and down the steps. She starts to run away. Meanwhile, the young, dark-haired girl enters a room where a student-y party is in full swing. There are two couples sitting on a bed.
Cheerleaders, Bob Lyman. Now, come on.
I wasn't a cheerleader. I was a major.
You can twirl on.
What?
You can twirl on.
What?
You can twirl on my.
Back at the house, the bedroom light is still on, the wooden trunk is open, and the knife and the wig are gone.
Hey, cutie. Hello. Do you have a John I can...
The dark-haired woman is in the motel back room. She goes over to an open window and closes it. She opens the door into a dark room. She puts on the light. It's the toilet. She pulls down her little denim shorts and sits down. She looks down.
Men.
She pulls down the toilet seat and sits again. She stares ahead. She looks up.
Hey, where'd you come from? Jeez, you about scared the piss out of me. Do you mind, sister? This is occupado.
A kitchen knife slashes the woman across the neck. The knife is thrust into her torso by the silhouetted figure of the old lady. The woman grips the toilet roll and she slumps forward. The knife cuts the toilet paper. The woman lies covered in blood on the floor. Her attacker walks away. Lights sweep across the head of a stuffed bird. Norman steps into the office.
Duke.
He walks into the dark back room.
Duke.
He heads slowly across the room and stops. He looks down. He leans into the toilet cubicle, then swings round, his hand over his mouth. The orange eyes of a stuffed owl stare at him in the darkness. Then Norman opens the cubicle's double doors. He looks down anxiously.
Hey, innkeeper! I need change!
Charlie, I got it!
Norman crouches over the body and grimaces as he struggles to move it. In the darkness, he drops it onto the ground outside. He climbs out of the window towards it. He rolls it over and picks it up. As someone approaches, he presses the dead woman against the wall as if in an embrace.
Will you get away from me?
Looks like somebody's getting lucky!
Norman shuffles to the corner of the building. He watches, mouth open, as the cars disappear into the darkness. Then Maureen is lying on her side in a fetal position on top of her bed, still in her pink dress. She gets up and moves over to the window. She pulls up the blind. Daylight, and a police car is outside her room. She opens the door and steps out.
What's happening?
Come on, Leo.
She heads past Tracy Venable.
You don't want to go up there.
Why? Something's wrong with Norm.
It's about time somebody told you.
She puts an arm around Maureen and leads her back to her room. Norman is lying on a long red couch in the house. He sits up with a start. He gets up and hovers at the doorway of the entrance hall. Then he goes to the front door and opens it.
Good morning, Norman. It's a little hot to be sleeping so late, isn't it?
Well, we had a lot of revelers last night.
Yeah, I know. One of them didn't come home. Name's Patsy Boyle. She came with a group of locals after the game to party with some of your guests. When they all left around 3, nobody noticed that she wasn't in the van. All pretty drunk, I guess.
Oh, someone's missing, and I'm the first one you think about.
Well, there have been other accusations lately, Norman.
From that reporter, I'll bet. What does she know? Nothing. Nothing.
Well, now, that's what we're going to find out. Now, it's too hot to argue. This range just made everything more muggy.
Nothing back there.
Of course there is. Now, please, get out of my house. I don't want you in here.
Sorry, Norman, but we have the warrant. And it's in everybody's best interest that we follow this case up.
Whose interest? Please, get out. There's nothing here. I haven't done anything.
And there's nothing to worry about, Norman. Norman, come back here! Norman! Norman, I'll gun you!
Norman bursts into the bedroom where the figure of the old woman had been lying on the bed. A young-looking deputy sheriff snoops around the room. He opens a heavy wardrobe door. He pushes a rocking chair and moves to a dressing table. He walks back towards Norman and shakes his head as he passes him. The sheriff enters the room.
Norman... What the hell's the matter with you?
He leaves. Norman is frowning at the bed.
Mother?
Later, the policemen are coming down the steps towards the motel building.
I'm sorry to put you through this, Norman. All seems a little unnecessary now.
Oh, that's okay.
Now, well, still no reason to get so riled up and go running off like that. Well, we'll leave you alone now. Again, I'm sorry.
That's not good enough, Sheriff. You just can't let it lie.
I've had enough of this Nancy Drew horse shit from you.
He opens the icebox.
I'm letting it lie, and so are you, you understand? Until I have evidence to the contrary, that young lady and Mrs. Spool are both missing persons cases.
Aren't you going to take him in for questioning or anything? Why don't you drag the swamp? That's where he dumped the last bodies.
Don't tell me my job, Ms. Venable.
Well, somebody has to. You're not going to let him go.
Despite all your glib insinuations, I don't have one iota of proof that he's done anything.
He hasn't. Norman was with me until 6 o'clock this morning. So whatever happened to that girl last night, Sheriff, Norman had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Well, miss...
He shuts the icebox.
If you'd have volunteered that tidbit a little sooner, you'd have saved us all a lot of trouble.
No one asked me.
Come on, Leo.
Hell of a time to be the street, Norman.
I think you better follow the sheriff's example, Miss Venable.
I'm taking a passenger.
She looks towards Maureen.
Ready?
Maureen looks down at Norman for a moment, then goes back along the veranda. Norman follows her. In her room, Maureen is shutting her suitcase.
She told you about me, didn't she?
Yes.
Where are you going?
She seems lost for words.
Father Bryant said I could come stay with him if I needed to. Please let me go.
She walks towards the doorway, clutching the suitcase. Norman grabs her shoulders, but he stops and releases his hands. Maureen steps towards a blue saloon car, which Tracy is waiting in. She gets into the passenger side, her suitcase on her lap. The car moves away, and Norman takes a few steps out onto the veranda as he watches the car leave. He raises and lowers his hand as if waving. Then, back in the house...
Mother! Mother! Mother!
He comes down the carpeted staircase.
Mother?
He walks along the shadowy entrance hall, past an imposing fireplace. He walks into the kitchen. He opens a door and closes it.
Mother, where are you?
He picks up a paper bag and smashes it against a jar on the table. He looks down at the table and lifts a scrap of paper upon which is written, Norman, I'm in cabin 12. Come see me, Mother. In the dusky light, he runs down the steps towards the motel. He walks along the veranda, wide-eyed, almost smiling, concentrating his gaze on the door to room 12. He pushes away the streamers tied to the wooden pillars. There are more remnants of last night's party. He opens the door of room 12. It's dark. The figure of the old woman is sitting motionless in front of the television.
Mother.
I love the dear silver that shines in your hair, and the brow that's all furrowed and wrinkled with care. I kiss the dear fingers so toil-worn for me. Oh, God bless you and keep you, dear mother. Bates.
Duane emerges out of the shadows.
Doesn't scan, does it, Norman? But a lot of shit around here doesn't.
What are you doing with my mother?
Don't you mean mummy?
He reveals Norman's mother as a gray stuffed corpse.
You did a nice job on her, Norman. Fresh as the day she was croaked.
Duane kisses the corpse on the cheek and touches his lips.
Why?
Just looking out for you, Norman.
And yourself.
Oh, I have ambitions. Dreams. But dreams don't come cheap these days. I mean, I could have turned Mama over to the cops this afternoon, but all that would have got me was a pat on the back for doing my civic duty.
He sits.
Now, girl reporter, she would have shelled out a few bucks, but then she would have taken the lion's share of the credit and parlayed that into a five-figure salary and a big news job. That's fine for her dreams, but what about mine? No, I figure... Mama's greatest value to me isn't her value to you.
I don't have that kind of money.
Don't cry poor to me, Norman, with that big piece of real estate up in the hill and this thriving business. Why, if things got tight, you could just sell an acre. Yeah.
Please, Duke. I want my mother back.
Take her. You know what I want. And you know what I'll do if I don't get it.
I know.
Norman throws a glass ashtray, which strikes Duane on the forehead. Duane gets up.
Oh, I'm gonna kill you, you little freak!
The two men stand on the bed, their hands round each other's throats. A cartoon plays on the TV. The bed slips forward, and the men fall onto the floor. Norman leaps up and smacks Duane in the face with a bedside lamp, knocking him out.
You think I'm stupid, Duke?
He kicks the bed.
Even if I gave you money, you'd still tell on Mother, and no one must know about her or what she's done!
He studies a scrap of Dwayne's pornographic collage.
She can't help it. She can't help the things she does. She's just an old lady. A sick old lady.
But the corpse is pointing at Dwayne, who is trying to get up. Norman swings the acoustic guitar back and brings it crashing down on Dwayne's head.
Watch the guitar.
But Norman brings down blow after blow of the guitar on Dwayne, destroying the instrument.
You shouldn't sneak up on a guy like that, Duke. I didn't mean it. I didn't want to.
He spins round to his mother.
You! You made me do this! You're tainted blood in me!
He covers his ears.
Don't laugh at me, Mother. Don't laugh at me.
Tracy is sitting in the diner in front of the chef and waitress.
I didn't even know she had any kids.
Wouldn't her job application have her next of kin on it?
Well, she was already working here when I bought the place 7 years ago. Best waitress I ever had, too. Real work ethic.
So she worked for the previous owner?
Harvey Leach.
What happened to him?
Last I heard, he was in a nursing home.
Outside town.
Probably dead now.
Then, a frail old man is doing a jigsaw. Tracy helps him put a piece into it.
Spool?
Emma Spool. She used to work for you in your diner.
Diner? Yeah. Yeah, I had a diner once.
And Mrs. Spool used to work for you.
I had a woman named Spool used to work for me.
Yes.
A waitress she was. She come from that place.
Place?
You know that place for nuts? The asylum?
Mrs. Spool was in an asylum?
Asylum, I said. Asylum, yeah. Yeah. You know, she killed somebody.
Who?
Somebody. Husband?
Tracy stares at him intently.
Don't recall. Good waitress, Spool.
In Father Brian's study.
Are you sure, Maureen?
Oh, yes. Norman understands me. He understands forgiveness. I failed so many people, Father, I won't fail him. That was why Mary came to me that night. He saved my life. It was a sign.
She moves towards the door and stops.
And the woman in the window. That must have been Mary, too.
With a contented smile, she opens the door and goes out. Tracy is in a dark room, leafing slowly through an old newspaper. She looks shocked as she reads a headline, "Sister arrested in Bates murder kidnapping, child unharmed in love triangle tragedy." Meanwhile, Norman pulls the pornographic magazine scraps off the wall. The body of the young man is wrapped in a polythene sheet. Norman looks towards the corpse of the old woman.
I'll be back to you, Mother.
He opens the lid of the icebox. The face of the murdered female partygoer sticks out of the ice. Some of the ice cubes have turned red. The woman's eyes are still open in shock. He reaches in and tugs at the woman's arm, which is frozen stiff and preventing his attempts to pull her out. He stops and glances around. He pulls harder and harder. He shuts his eyes. He's now carrying the woman. It's raining. He leans over and kisses her on the lips. Then he lowers the woman down and slowly shuts the boot of the car. The plastic-wrapped body of Dwayne is sitting up in the back of the vehicle. Norman pushes it over onto the seat. Then Norman's driving. With a look of intense concentration, he stares forward into the darkness. Suddenly, a hand reaches over from the back seat and a wire is pulled around Norman's neck. He's thrust backwards. He slams on the brake. Dwayne is thrown onto the passenger seat. Dwayne pulls the plastic off his face. Norman leans down and puts his foot on Dwayne's neck, pinning him to the floor. But Norman's other foot slips off the brake and onto the accelerator. The car speeds forwards through an area of bulrushes. Dwayne struggles but cannot move. The car careers into a lake and starts to sink. Dwayne's head is now underwater. A few air bubbles rise up from his mouth. Norman holds up an oil lamp as the water pours into the car. The car reaches the bottom of the lake. Norman pulls himself out of the side of the car and swims through the heavy weeds. There is an old bike wheel in the mud. He pushes through more weeds. Suddenly, he's confronted with the face of a dead young woman staring at him. He opens his mouth to scream. Then he reaches the surface of the lake and proceeds to wade towards the water's edge. Meanwhile, Tracy is in Father Brian's study.
I thought if she saw these copies, she might change her story to the police.
The priest holds up the newspaper clippings.
Can I see her?
I'm afraid not.
Tracy looks confused. Later, soft lamps light up the motel veranda. A showerhead is dripping water. A woman's top is hanging up in the bathroom. Maureen is sitting at a dressing table in a silk dressing gown. She carefully takes off a necklace and puts it on the table. She looks at herself in the mirror. She gets up and goes to the window.
Norman!
Norman turns and rushes towards the house. Then, still in her dressing gown, Maureen pushes open the front door of the house. She slowly walks into the entrance hall. She passes a statuette of Cupid pointing an arrow at the bottom of the stairs.
Norman, it's me. I've come back.
She ascends the staircase, looking up at the dark balustrades on the landing.
I never should have gone away. Whatever happened to you in your past, I know you're good. You took a life, but you also saved a life. My life. Let it be your life. Oh, Norman.
A silhouetted figure stands in front of her.
What happened to you?
I slipped in the mud.
I slipped too. I know I've hurt you. Can you forgive me?
Norman!
Maureen falls backwards down the stairs. Her head backs into the point of Cupid's arrow.
Maureen!
Maureen slumps to the floor. The arrow tip is covered in blood. Norman rushes down the stairs looking distressed. He crouches over her.
Maureen? Maureen? Maureen?
He lifts his hand. It's covered in the blood from her fatal head wound. A car pulls up outside the open door of Maureen's room. Tracy gets out, brandishing a crowbar.
Maureen!
She steps up onto the veranda and then walks carefully towards the doorway, peering round.
Maureen!
She goes into the dark room.
Maureen!
She walks towards the lit bathroom. The front door shuts. She rushes into the bathroom. She pulls back the shower curtain. Maureen's dress is hanging up. Tracy sighs with relief. She moves towards the bathroom door. She reaches round and switches on the bedroom light. The bed is made and the room is neat and tidy. Tracy rests her head against the doorway.
Get that whore out of my house. Throw her down in the muck and filth where she belongs.
I'll get you for this, Mother. I'll get you for this.
You haven't got the guts, boy.
Outside the house, Tracy rushes up to the window, but she can't reach up to see inside. She tries to clamber up but falls slightly. Norman reacts and moves over to the window. He lifts up the heavy curtain and looks out. The motel is deserted. Tracy trots up the stairs to the main door, but it's locked. She runs off. Then she breaks open the kitchen door with a crowbar. She looks at the taxidermy ingredients on the kitchen table. She walks slowly and carefully around the kitchen units, gripping the crowbar tightly. She walks into the entrance hall, which is pitch black. She moves into some light. She reaches the bottom of the stairs and looks up. She momentarily closes her eyes in relief that no one's there. She turns and is drawn towards the sitting room, which has been filled with lit candles. Lying on her back on the sofa is the body of Maureen, as if she's asleep. The room looks like a religious shrine. Tracy approaches the sofa and stands in front of the body.
You dumb, stupid, naive girl.
She turns slowly round. Behind her, wearing the old lady's wig and dress, Norman is grinning. She staggers back.
Why can't you leave my poor son, my Norman, alone?
Tracy rushes over to the main door, but it's locked. Norman is slowly stalking her. She tries another door, then heads up the stairs, looking back at him.
What set you off again, Norman? Mrs. Fool? You killed her, didn't you? What did she do? Come to you, tell you that she was your mother? She was crazy, Norman, but she wasn't your mother. Neither are you!
Norman resolutely climbs the stairs.
Mrs. Fool was your aunt, Norman. She was in love with your father, but your mother stole him away from her!
Mrs. Fool killed your father in a jealous rage and kidnapped you when you were just a baby!
The corpse of the old woman is in a chair.
She killed your mother because she thought you were a child! The child she should have had with him!
Tracy looks round nervously.
She was crazy! They locked her away!
It's lies! It's all lies!
Norman!
She's a lying whore.
Norman, where are you?
She's a slut. Norman! Don't let her talk about me like that.
Norman! Please, Norman, please listen to me. Norman, Mrs. Bates, whoever you are, damn it, doesn't it make any difference in that demented brain of yours?
Get her, boy. Get her. Just like the others.
He remembers the other killings. He stabs the corpse.
Norman, can't you do anything right? How dare you
treat your mother in such ways? Norman.
So I don't have the guts, huh?
The head of the corpse is cut off, and Norman slashes wildly at the dust-filled body. Tracy shakes her head as she watches. Norman picks up the arm of the woman and lays it gently down. He slumps over, resting his head on his arm and staring into the distance. Daylight, and Norman is being led away from the house by the sheriff. A TV news crew is filming it all.
I was for you, Norman. Believed in you. Made a fool of me. Look what you did to yourself. Why, Norman, why? Good God, son. You'll never get out again.
Norman's now in the sheriff's car.
They're gonna have you locked up forever.
But I'll be free. I'll finally be free.
He looks back at the sinister house as the car moves away. He's sitting on the back seat, lost in thought. He glances towards the driver, then looks downwards. He reaches into the inside of his jacket and pulls out the grey stuffed arm of the dead old woman. He tenderly strokes its hand. He smiles darkly as he looks at it. Then he looks directly forward. His smile widens as his face is enveloped in shadows. The end.